Thanks very much for coming. I'm co-directing the U.S. Leadership and Development Project here. I'm Dan Rundy at CSIS, and my co-director, Joanna Nesseth, is going to be moderating this very interesting panel discussion about, I think, one of the more interesting partnership arrangements I've heard about, which is the Cargill Care Rural Development Initiative. It's the largest and oldest and strongest partnership that CARE has with a company. We talk a lot in the development business about scale and sustainability. And this is, I think, a very interesting case study of matching up interests and capabilities. And I think you'll learn a lot about some of the courting process that CARE went through, thinking about whether and how to partner with Cargill. I think Cargill also did the same. And I think that it's linking not just resources from Cargill in terms of their money, but it's also their reach, their expertise, and most important, their supply chain buying power. In the case of CARE, it's about their reach and their ability to partner with rural communities, but also their ability to deal with a number of cross-cutting issues, whether it's education or agriculture or community development. But without any further ado, I'm going to hand the floor over to my colleague, Joanna Nesseth. Joanna.
Well, good afternoon. I'm just thrilled to see such a great turnout today when we invited Radha and Michelle to take a plunge and join us for a public event. I had no idea that we'd have so much interest. Michelle Grogg is with the Cargill Foundation and has the lead on Cargill's very deep and intense partnership with CARE. Radha is Vice President for Partnerships at CARE. Mm-hmm. And has helped CARE to rethink the way they work with companies. We're going to hear a little bit more about this. My work at CSIS for the past several years is focused on food security and agricultural development. I grew up in Minnesota, so I'm very happy to be here with someone representing a Minnesota company talking about agriculture. I just spent the last few days in Minneapolis talking about food and ag policy, which has been a fascinating conversation.
Did you figure it out?
It's a process. Okay. It's a process to tell. So I want to, first of all, just mention that this is part of a new series that we've got in partnership with Chevron. Chevron's been helping us to think about how we can talk more about development, the role of the private sector, and the role that partnerships play in development. So we thank them for their support and partnership as we move forward. And I also want to mention very briefly, if you are interested in agriculture, we will be meeting here next week on Thursday in the afternoon to talk about JICA, Japan's Foreign Assistance Agency, and the work that they're doing on ag research around rice and other issues in Africa. If you're interested in that, we'll have some information at the end. So please feel free to join us for that. Without further ado, I want to turn to the agenda that we have. Radha, I want to start with you because you represent CARE, which is one of the largest private humanitarian organizations in the world. You're in 87 countries. You improve countless lives. So I want to just set the stage by asking each of you to talk a little bit about your organization. So why don't you talk just a little bit about what CARE does?
Sure. Thanks, Joanna. CARE has been in the poverty-fighting business, if you will, for over six decades now. So we just actually completed our 65th anniversary this year. And as you can imagine, over that period of time, we've had to evolve the models through which we engage in development. Lots has changed. The development landscape has changed significantly. CARE actually started with the CARE package to World War II recipients, you know, in Europe to support them after the war there. So that was our beginnings. And we've evolved since then to providing, you know, after that it was providing food to developed, less developed countries within the world. We really expanded from that to go from food delivery to nutrition and health and economic issues related to, you know, men and women as well. But in the last five, 6 years or so, we've been really focused on looking at women in particular. And I think women as target segments, as well as women as catalysts in their communities. I think many of you here also probably know the exponential power that women can have in transforming their own lives as well as lives of those around them. And so for us, when we looked at all of the statistics and our work in the past, it was quite clear that if we wanted to have a real impact, certainly, you know, women needed to be a target audience of ours as well.
And in contrast, Michelle, tell us a little bit about Cargill. You're the largest privately owned company in the U.S., a huge, huge international force in agriculture. So tell us a bit about your operations and what's brought you to this partnership.
Sure. Well, Cargill serves customers actually in agriculture, yes, but also in food, industrial, and financial markets. So really, we're primarily a food ingredient company. So we're the malt in your beer, the flour in your bread, the oil in your salad dressing, the chocolate in the cocoa and a lot of the chocolate bars that you eat. So really, you probably experience Cargill more often than you realize. We do have a very significant global presence. Cargill's in 66 countries. We have about 133,000 employees. And nearly half of those today are in developing or emerging markets. So our employees are living in many of the communities that actually CARE is serving, and that's one of the really neat things about our partnership. If you overlay where CARE operates and where Cargill operates, there was really quite a bit of crossover. And so as we began to look for a partner, it was really a natural fit for that and many other reasons, which we can get into.
Great. Well, I want to turn back to you, Radha, and ask you to talk us through the process that CARE went through when you reevaluated the way you work with companies. Mm. It's a fascinating story, and it's a fascinating approach that you've taken. So if you could take some time to tell the audience a little bit about that.
Sure. Yeah, CARE has worked with partners for, you know, since the beginning. So we've worked with local NGOs in many of the countries that we work in as well. And we've worked with corporations for a very long time as well. What's changed for us as we assess kind of the changes in the development landscape as well is we realized that corporations could do just so much more than just the philanthropic funding, you know, the writing of the check, if you will. And we're very grateful for those checks that are written, but we do know that there are, you know, a lot more assets that can be brought to the table as well. And so when CARE went through its last strategic planning process about 5 years ago or so, we looked carefully at, you know, what were our core strengths and then where could we really leverage and work together with other partners, you know, drawing on their strengths as well. And we realized with the private sector that we really had an amazing set of companies that we were working with. At the time, it was about over 2,000 companies that we were engaged with. And again, when I say engaged, it could be those who would write us a check once a year to those that we had deep, you know, meaningful relationships with as well. And we realized, given our own capacity, that if we really wanted to draw on the significant asset-based technical expertise that these companies had, you know, number one, we couldn't work with all 2,000. You know, that just didn't make any sense for us. And two, you know, we really wanted to just narrow down and better understand those companies that were in it for the long term, if you will, you know, that really were looking at the developing world as important to their businesses. So not just from a corporate social responsibility or philanthropic perspective, but really certain markets where their bottom line profitability, you know, hinged on for the future. And so we did some significant internal studies of which we drew upon our corporate partner expertise and other experts as well to narrow down those 2,000 companies to today is maybe 100 plus, you know, that we're engaged with. And so you can imagine, and for those of you in NGOs, you know, if you go up to your CEO and say, by the way, we're not going to work with 1,900, you know, other corporations that have been writing us a check, there was, you know, a fair amount of internal resistance initially in adjusting to this new approach. But we laid out the strategy that said, you know, of these 100 or so companies, they're in 5 industries. They're industries that are critical to the work that we're doing. You know, it's the financial industry, and you look at financial literacy issues for women as well, or you look at the agriculture industry, as is the case with Cargill, and what they can bring to the table to really meet our goal when we say it's eradicating poverty. So today we work with 5 primary industry areas, and within that, as I said, about 100 companies. And what we've tried to do is ensure that we have what we call a multi-asset engagement. So yes, the dollars are important, but you know, it's either technical expertise or marketing or governance issues, or their supply chains, you know, somehow can incorporate the poor, or just influencing some of the practices that some of our corporate partners have as well. So that's really some of the transformation that has occurred. And what we try and do is also have what we call an alliance partner within each of our 5 industries. And Cargill is our alliance partner in the agriculture space. And really for us, what that means is that, yes, they're bringing multiple assets to the table, and we work across a broad geography as well with them, across multiple different issues, as we'll talk about, you know, that our partnership covers. But also that Cargill is an anchor within their industry, you know, to really being able to share the message of what we're doing together, and to try and, you know, both of us together try and influence what others in that space, and in this case with Cargill, their customers, you know, as well, and what their practices are.
It's a fascinating process. I'm amazed that you made it here and that you've shown some great results. Not at the end, but at this point.
Sure.
And now turning to you, Michelle, it would be great if you could talk a little bit about the Cargill Foundation, what you do, what brought you to this very important and strategic partnership with CARE, which is an old, longstanding partnership, but has really ramped up in the past few years.
Sure. Well, Cargill and CARE began working together about 20 years ago, actually. So the relationship has been long. But for a long time, it was really based in philanthropy. We were writing checks. They were doing really, really good programs. But about the same time, CARE was doing its strategic planning and really shifting the way it approached partnerships. Cargo was very much doing the same. And we knew we wanted to go deeper. We wanted to be much more tied to our business objectives and the supply chains in which we're operating. And we wanted to be much more strategic about how and where we were making those investments. And so really, maybe you say timing is everything, but the two organizations came together, I think, at a really, really good time. What else did you ask me? I just lost my train of thought. So in terms of how we structure this as well, Cargill has approached our relationship with CARE very much like we do our key corporate accounts. So as we manage a very significant customer relationship, that's how we approached our relationship with CARE. We didn't want it to be rooted just in a financial commitment, although a $10 million commitment was certainly our largest gift as well. So it was very, very significant. But with that meant we really needed to invest then. We needed to invest in our businesses and make sure that there were really good local connections. And so as the relationship has evolved, it really went from sort of people sitting around the table in Minneapolis or Atlanta at sort of a headquarters level, thinking about what could this partnership look like, to really having this owned and embraced by our local country offices as well as those of CARES. And so we have a commitment to reach 100,000 people over a five-year time period. And all of those projects are very much aligned to Cargill's businesses and what we do. So for example, in Ghana and in Cote d'Ivoire, it's focused around cocoa farmers. They supply Cargill's facilities there, so very, very important to make that connection. In Egypt, it's about soybeans and in Central America, we're looking at education programs. In India, it's about girls' education, but also focused around improving the livelihoods of farmers there as well. So again, in all cases, it's very much linked to our business strategy, and involves the time and the talent of Cargill people.
Can you talk a little bit more about what you're actually doing in these different sectors and in these different countries? You talked a little bit about the soybean, the process to move from rice to soybean in Egypt and other things. Can you just, both of you, maybe just explain a few of your most significant efforts?
Sure. I'll start with one in India that I'm very proud of, because I was there as assistant country director in India before this current role with CARE, and it was, very important to have the Cargill partnership there. It's in a state of called Gujarat, and where we have, girls who essentially are, in the salt pans, and for most of the year, but we were able to develop and provide schooling opportunities for them to ensure that they have, consistent school programs. And in addition to that, as Michelle just mentioned, we've got farmers, who are really looking at, as they, have milk for sale, how do they access markets, to be able to have a sustainable source of income from that. And so to be able to really both, allowing the access, but also understanding what are some of the barriers that may emerge, in the future as well. So it's not sort of a one-time, issue that we've addressed, but it's a sustainable sort of engagement, for them going forward as well. And in all of those cases, when you look at some of the barriers that are out there, there are certain things that CARE through its own networks can do, but I think the power of what came together was when we leveraged our network with Cargill on the ground and their their networks within the state and nationally as well to be able to sort of permanently, from a policy perspective, remove some of these barriers that were preventing these farmers from accessing these markets before as well.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Michelle?
Yeah, I think the Egypt example is an interesting one because this was a project that really was developed after we made our five-year commitment. This was developed out of conversations that our business was having with the CARE office in Egypt, and an interest, as you said, in moving from a very water-intensive crop with rice to soybeans. And Cargill has a soybean processing facility there, so it's in our interest as well to look at how we can increase the supply of soybeans. So in this particular case, Cargill used its expertise to help these farmers make that transition. They then are selling their soybeans through Cargill's supply chain, and we're able to pay them a premium, which then they go and reinvest in the local community there. In Ghana, and I was there last fall, we started that project back in 2006, actually prior to making our five-year commitment. And we started really around child labor awareness and education, so we wanted to make sure that farmers in the supply chain, and in that case, as well as in Cote d'Ivoire, Cargill does not buy direct from farmers, but we do work with co-ops. And obviously, it's in our best interest to see the yields and the quality of the cocoa beans improve. And so we do farmer training. And we started this program with CARE, focused really around child labor awareness and education. But as we got in and we learned what the needs were of the community, that program has really expanded. It started in 30 communities. It's grown now to about 110. And we're working on issues such as, you know, improving yields and things like that, as well as helping women form village savings and loan programs, which is just a great program that, that CARE offers to help women. So that's another thing, is we certainly look at what is the gender balance in the programs that, that we're supporting. One, I think, really unique thing that we've done, and it happened in Egypt as well as in Ghana. When I was there, we brought actually one of the CARE farmers who are in the program up to Accra, to where we have our processing facility. And he came, and it was the first time he had seen what happens to his cocoa beans. And, you know, so for him, he looked at it, and he went through, and he said, well, I understand why it's important that the quality and the yields improve. I understand what it is you're doing with it. And we had the same experience in Egypt, where we brought the farmers to our plant so they could see what it is we do with it. And that was just a really, really neat way to kind of educate and inform one another about the process. So,
and I think if I can just add to that, you know, one thing that, that's been interesting is we've conceived of some of these partnerships, you know, for the most part at headquarters with input, you know, from our colleagues at the country level as well. But it's in these visits and as our country staff get together that they realize, gosh, you know, with a slightly different intervention or additional technical support, you know, we could really have far greater impact. And I think that that's what's been amazing about this partnership. While we have something that's, you know, on paper and this is what we're going to do and who we're going to reach, but it's not one that's static. It's one that continues to evolve. We've added, you know, country, as Michelle's mentioned, since the Rural Development Initiative was developed. And then we've added different interventions. So in Ghana, for example, again, but, you know, Cargill has terrific technical expertise in how to improve, you know, yields in the farm. You know, while that may not have been an original part of the project, you know, it's certainly one that would be really valuable. And what we've seen with our Cargill colleagues as well is the interest in volunteering and engaging in different ways well beyond what we have, you know, scripted out as the partnership. And I think it's those that sort of active engagement and sort of continuing to think about what we can do together that's made it quite unique as well.
Sorry, I was going to say, it's been a great learning for Cargill employees as well, because when you go and you call them from Minneapolis and you say, hey, we've got this great partner and we're going to work at capacity building at the community level, and they sort of, what does that mean? And, you know, this whole language, you know, we talk about sort of the language of NGOs and how do you translate that into a business perspective. Why can't I just build a school? If I build a school, you know, there's going to be education. Well, we know that that's not the case. You have to have all the support. You have to. It's, in some cases, it's really about changing behaviors and cultures, about acceptability and sending girls to school and things like that. So it takes a long time. So that's been one of the big learnings as well, just trying to get our business people on the ground to understand the importance of making a long-term commitment, investing in the capacity building that is so critical to ensuring that these programs actually succeed and live much beyond where Cargill will fund or, you know, any of us will provide funding.
Well, you guys have hit on a theme that I think comes up a lot, and that is that the more you talk and the more you get to know about each other, the more depth your relationship has and the more effect the partnership has. The more you know about Cargill's strengths, the more you can match them up to the needs of the folks in the communities where you're working. So I wanted to ask a little bit about how you go about that dialogue. And it sounds like it started at sort of boardroom levels, but it's really sifted down to where people in the company and the business units are talking with folks in country at CARE and just having an ongoing dialogue about what the needs of the community are and saying, hey, we actually have some capacity there. I wonder if you guys can talk a little bit about how that dialogue works and what you see out of it.
Should I start with that?
Sure.
Okay. It's true, you know, when you have a partnership that's been as long-standing as ours, it's, again, there are different models that work at different periods of time, and now that we have one that cuts across so many different countries and issues and parts of the world, we find that we've at CARE taken what we call an account team approach, again, sort of borrowing from the corporate and business lingo, but really applying it fairly effectively, I think, internally, where we know it goes beyond a Cargill relationship manager, you know, who's engaging with, you know, with our colleagues on the Cargill side, but it's various technical colleagues, you know, who have to come to the table at all stages of the process as well. So we've got our, you know, girls' education specialists, our agriculture specialists, our, you know, economic development specialists who sit, you know, and devote a good chunk of their time to be part of the larger Cargill CARE team. Right from the beginning, as we're thinking about how do we design something that, you know, will be effective and will actually bear the fruit that we see, you know, at the end of the 5 years or so here. And so there are those individuals. And then we obviously have to include all of our colleagues at the country level as well. And so So what we've tried to do, it was a little bit, I would say, more ad hoc in the beginning, and just because of the sheer size and complexity now, it's a little bit more structured, you know, where we do have to sort of have quarterly calls with the entire Cargill account team so that they're, it's a process of sharing knowledge and learning as well. You know, what are we doing in Brazil, and what have we learned that may not have worked, you know, as we thought it would? And there's a similar kind of process going through in Ghana, perhaps in the next stage, you know, so what do we learn from that? So it's both an internal knowledge sharing, but it's also being able to work closely with our Cargill colleagues at the various levels, you know, to talk about, you know, some of the interventions that might be working and how we can take it further. So I think what may have begun, I don't know, in 1992 as a, you know, some interaction around the check that arrived, it's certainly a daily, weekly, ongoing, you know, discussion with multiple site visits and things like that as well. So it's one that we have very deliberately spent a lot more time, you know, with, and this, what I mentioned earlier, that's why we can't work with 2,000 companies. You know, it really has to be far smaller. And, you know, just as we have with Cargill, we've got three or four other alliance partners. And so we try and allocate the amount of time, not just of, you know, our staff here in the U.S., but also staff in the field, along with, you know, the alliance partners versus other partners as well. So it's sort of a deliberate effort there. Mm-hmm.
How about from your perspective?
Well, and I would say that is a fairly unique approach that you're hearing from CARE. I think organizations, both on the corporate side and the NGO side, are getting more sophisticated in how we do partnerships. But CARE is, I would argue, further along than many in how they're approaching these business partnerships. They really have put the time and the effort into trying to learn our businesses at the local level and at the global level. That makes a huge difference. I think one of the other things that's strong is that the people who work for CARE in the market access group or in the nutrition group, they're really experts in their field. They have a lot of credibility. So when they go and they talk to Cargill business people on the ground, they really know the issues. They understand the markets. And that makes a really big difference, too. So they have sort of instant credibility. They aren't going and they're just trying to raise funds. They're going in there really to address complex issues that that are impacting our business and certainly the communities in which we're working. And I think that's made just a huge difference.
That's very interesting. Although I do have the sense that you guys have like a red phone on your desk and it's like your hotline that you're on all the time.
No, but we should.
That's you guys talk idea. A lot, I know. Now, and I know that everyone here will probably understand that the devil's in the details when it comes to some of these partnership questions. So I wanted to ask if you can talk a little bit about some of the limitations. Radha, I know CARE is... You have a U.S. operation, but you've got chapters around the world, and there are concerns in terms of what kinds of companies you
sure.
work with and how you work with them. So maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Sure.
And Michelle, some of the complications that you may run into in doing some of these large-scale operations.
Sure. Sure. No, in any partnership, I think you want to really understand the motivations, you know, of the partner that you're potentially going to engage in, whether they're a for-profit partner or a not-for-profit partner. I think there's an added dimension, you know, when it's a for-profit partner, where a lot of us certainly within CARE, you know, really want to understand sort of what are the motives, you know, behind this particular corporate partner wanting to engage with us. And I think, you know, many of you probably know too, I mean, we've all had partnerships where you sit back at the end of the day and think, okay, so was that really, you know, did that get us to where we needed to, or was it just sort of a brand sharing, you know, exercise, public relations exercise as well? And so for us within CARE, you know, we're in 87 different countries. We needed to ensure that as we worked with global multinational companies, that we had a fairly consistent approach to how we worked and who we chose to work with as well. And that's been, you know, an ongoing internal exercise for us to come to the common platform of, you know, what are the criteria and how and who will we engage with. What we do is that we take a considerable amount of time, you know, anywhere from a couple of months to perhaps up to 6 months, you know, to really understand the company, how it's engaged in the development sphere before, understand the business units, you know, where they operate, what their motivations, you know, are, where they're likely to, you know, be looking for, you know, for enhancements to their bottom line in the future. A really important part for us also is just to understand philosophies, and, you know, and that's not something you can pick up an annual report and sort of understand, you know, so there's a lot of engagement with our potential partners ahead of time just to understand their motivations and philosophies for why they might want to partner as well. So I think the courting stage, as I call it, can be reasonably long, you know, when we're developing a partnership. But we have found that when we've taken the time and not necessarily been rushed, that those are the partnerships actually that have worked out and are sustainable ones for us. Mm-hmm. And it's also, as I mentioned earlier, it helped that we've done several studies and determined, like, okay, it's partnerships in five industries that we see really moving the bar, you know, for women in development. And so then within within that, it's really sort of understanding, you know, the different types of companies as well. So there's one set, which is the corporate, you know, due diligence criteria and process of UL, and the other is just internal socialization, you know, really making sure that our staff have a good sense of why the private sector, what the private sector can bring that we can't do ourselves, and how the benefits of that, you know, can outweigh some of the potential, you know, downsides as well. Mm-hmm.
And Michelle, I would think that if I were trying to give someone a check, I would be like, would you stop taking me through this process? My gosh, can't I just write you a check? So I know that this is a process that you have brought people along with, but I'm curious from your perspective, mm-hmm. you know, how does it all work? What are the downsides or the details that get to be, you know, sticky?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually think that more organizations today are going through a more formal due diligence process. I think people are much more thoughtful about how they partner. But when we started this in CARE, you know, we were talking about different programs and ways we could partner, and range from very project level support to things like, hey, we really need some guidance around human resources and recruiting and things like that. And so we were really moving down the track, and then we got this request from CARE saying, hey, we have a very thorough due diligence process that we need to review Cargill, determine whether or not we think you're going to be a suitable partner for us. And it was, at the time, probably 5 or 6 pages with a whole series of questions of, you know, what is your position on this issue? How do you do this? What are your ethics? What are your guiding principles? And there were people within Cargill that thought, well, how can they ask us that?
Oh, for Cargill.
And, come on! And, you know, I pushed back and said, we put our partners through a very rigorous process when we're choosing who we're going to provide investments to. And it's very much fair that they would do that on the other side. So it took some, I think, educating within the House of Cargill to say, hey, this is how it is, and we need to be able to stand up to the expectations that our partners have of us. So we went through the process. Unfortunately, you know, for us, it did work out. But through that, we had some really good conversations about the importance of trust and about transparency. And if we have an issue that's coming down the pike, we don't want CARE to be the last to know. We want them to be the first to know. So as we would inform customers, we would inform, you know, key partners like CARE so that they don't hear it in the media. So there's been a real commitment to doing that kind of communication with each other. I'll also say that it's, you know, we also agreed that we wouldn't necessarily always agree. So there may be times when they go out on a position and Cargill doesn't quite agree with that, although I would say those are pretty few and far between. Yeah. We tend to have pretty similar views on things like food security and other types of issues. So it's worked out. But we know those times have happened. We know that they'll continue to happen. But there's really been a commitment between the two organizations to try to work through those.
Great. Well, so it's not fair for me to get to ask all the questions. So why don't we open up to audience questions? I think we have some microphones. There's Libby right in front here. If you would just briefly state your name and affiliation and then your question. Gentleman in the front with the glasses.
Name is Omar Taha with Edizia and Nutriset, producers of ready-to-use foods. I think what you guys are doing is wonderful. I commend you both for it. You're going above and beyond, especially in the case of Cargill, corporate social responsibility. I do have a question about a new foundation that you guys recently launched with General Mills and DSM.
Sure.
Partnership for Food Solutions.
Partners in Food Solutions.
Yes,
yep.
And how that initiative, what links might exist between this partnership and that, and other public-private partnerships like a new one that was released, DSM Gain WFP Project Laser Beam, I believe.
Yeah.
But same goals.
Yeah, very, very similar. Well, first I'd start by saying that, as you know, Cargill, just like CARE, we have a set of filters when we're making decisions about the kinds of programs that we're going to invest in, and one of them is around collaboration. So as a funder, we see a lot of duplication out there. You hear one organization come and they want to fund a nutrition program in a particular country, and then you hear another organization come and ask for the same type of program in the same country. And so one of the things that we look for are where there are unique partnerships and ways to collaborate. So actually, I have to give a lot of credit to General Mills. Partners in Food Solutions was really born from their idea and their desire as a Minnesota-based company to say, how can we use the talent and expertise within our own company and share that with small and medium-sized processors in Africa? And there was some skepticism, I think, at first about how can you really do that? How can a Minnesota company really help these organizations? And as they got more traction, the results really were very, very impressive. And so they actually really were the ones who reached out and said, we want to broaden this circle TechnoServe is a key implementing partner for that relationship. They're also a partner of Cargill's. And General Mills is a very important customer to Cargill's as well. DSM is an important supplier. And as we began to talk about what could each company bring to the table, there was really a very natural connection there. And so it's early. The program, the partnership in terms of expanding out to DSM and Cargill, we actually had our first meeting 3 weeks ago in terms of how we're going to operationalize this within the company. But the goal is to really tap into the talent and the expertise within those companies and help these organizations. And one of the examples that General Mills used was a very small manufacturer, and they sent a fax off a napkin. They had sort of drawn, the outline of what the plant looked like, and just from that simple drawing, their engineers were able to go, hey, if you move this here or move this here, you're going to be a much more efficient operation. So the very simple things like that to much more technical things as well. So we'll see where it goes. We're really excited about it. Cargill brings a little bit different set of expertise to that partnership, given we have operations on the ground. So we'll see.
Great. Question right here.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Rosemary Seguero. I'm the president of Hope for Tomorrow. We focus on empowering women, young people, and the homeless here in the district. Thank you for the wonderful event since it was launched. What I'm asking, how many countries are you in Africa? We focus on empowering women through agriculture because African women, 80% till on land. So are you planning to partner with small organizations or looking at culture, tradition, or as you say, you've been in business for maybe 5 years in those countries. What countries have you reached and what are you doing though apart from few countries? And how can you partner with small companies without big criteria like yours to make that happen in the rural areas of those countries and empower women? As you said, when you empower women, you empower the whole community. How can we partner with you big companies?
Thank you.
Big companies specifically? I mean, I think, CARE, CARE works very much with local NGOs and local organizations on the ground in these countries. So it isn't just about Cargill and CARE, it's about how do we leverage the organizations and the work that's happening already on the ground in those countries. Do you want to talk a bit about the approach?
Yeah, I'm happy to do that. I think in a couple different ways I'd answer your question. One is the CARE Cargill Partnership Rural Development Initiative, is in two countries in Africa, in Cote d'Ivoire and in Ghana. But well
beyond
Egypt, yes. Yes, yep, exactly. So you can consider MENA. I think there are ways to engage within that, but just as Michelle said, Cargill is in many other countries, in Africa, and we're in probably, 18 to 20 countries in Africa as well. And so the way we work is through local NGOs and through some local corporations and local companies as well. I mean, what often happens is, yes, we have a partnership with a Cargill, significant company, but if you think about the supply chain and the various intermediaries, there are small, medium-sized companies that are involved along the chain. So as we look at incorporating our smallholder farmers or Small Village and Savings Loans Association, it's rare that it's directly, with a significant corporate player. It goes through many layers that involve, small corporations and small companies as well. So that's those are some of the ways that we engage. And in terms of our engagement through local NGOs, the numbers I'd seen is two-thirds of the funding and the engagement that CARE gets are actually not implemented directly by CARE. So it goes, straight out to hundreds and hundreds of small NGOs that we engage with as well.
I'm afraid I have to go to the next question. I had one right behind you there.
Gary Derringer with World Food Program USA. Obviously, a lot of international organizations are trying to leverage the corporate knowledge and expertise. And obviously, it sounds like a wonderful idea, and it has a lot of potential, but it can be hard on both sides. From the company point of view, having a technical expert come out and do something in the field and move away from his business responsibilities, and on the NGO side, training that person. What have you found to be successful in using staff for this partnership?
Mm. Either one of us can start. You're right, Darian. Good to see you. I think That's one of the reasons why we've worked so hard to tie it back to our businesses, or at least into the communities and the supply chains in which we work, because then it is directly relevant. Mm. So yes, our people have day jobs, and it's in our best interest that we succeed as a business so that we can continue to reinvest in many of these countries, and so that is certainly our priority. But you take the example of Ghana and the work that we're doing in West Africa, and as I said before, it's in our best interest to see those farmers succeed. You know, we want to see them get out of poverty. We want to see them grow their businesses and provide more inputs to the small and medium-sized processors. It's going to raise everybody up. And so I think that, you know, while sometimes you can look at it as this is a very charitable project and it's a really nice thing to do, it's corporate responsibility, but there is value. Plus, our employees live in these communities, and so, you know, that they want to be involved. In Central America, and this is a little bit unique, Cargill employees volunteer all over the world, but we have a meat processing business in Central America, and 95% of our employees, they're volunteer on a regular basis. They're out several times a week. Their engagement scores are in the 100% range. It's really remarkable, but they do it because they're out in the schools, they're building kitchens, they're building desks for the schools, because these are where their kids go. So there's very much a natural connection, and I guess that would be one of the lessons, you know, that I've learned. The more we can connect it to the business, to our employees, to their interests, to the communities, that's just, you know, that's where we really achieve success, and then it makes it worth it to send out our technical people and learn those.
No, and I would add to that saying that, you know, it's a constant struggle that we have as an NGO. You know, we have many donors, be they individual or corporate partners, who say, you know, it's great that we're supporting you in all of these other ways, but our employees want to get engaged, you know, and how do we do that? And it is a challenge. You know, what we found is that we're not a habitat. We're not, we don't have a value proposition that allows people to come in, do something in 5 days, and move out. It's just not the nature of our work. And so where we've been successful, and it's in limited areas from a volunteer engagement perspective, is, as Michelle says, when it's really well connected to the work of the employees directly. You know, so we've got a lot of support, you know, from many other partnerships as well, you know, where it's marketing, you know, where we need some specific expertise, and we know that that's of interest, and that resides, you know, with the local employees, you know, in that area, and we can tap into that. But no, we actually do struggle with that because, as you say, it's taking, you know, some time away from what our care, you know, staffer would be doing, you know, to be able to orient, to indoctrinate, et cetera. And so much of what we do just can't be done in a defined period, you know. So what we've tried to do in some instances is where we have longer-term programs, be able to match up, you know, the skill sets that we have, you know, and where we will be going outside anyway, you know, to contract some additional, expertise. And when we have longer-term projects, we're able to say, oh, in phase two of this, we're going to need a certain set of skills. And when we have that visibility, we do look to our corporate partners to say, you know, we think we're going to have, you know, X type of position for 3 months, for 6 months, you know, that type of thing. We've done that well with, you know, General Mills was just mentioned, with some of our partners in the pharmaceutical space as well, where we have some regular, you know, fellowships. But again, it's sort of dependent on visibility and knowing, you know, when we might need that as well. And I will just add, you know, we've talked a lot about technical expertise. An organization like CARE, you know, it's also a multinational organization. So we need some just sort of, you know, running the business expertise. And that's something that we've really relied on, you know, from some of our corporate partners as well. So it's not just on the ground and, you know, in the field, but also just in terms of, you know, governance of a large, complicated multinational organization. And we do benefit quite a bit from some of our corporate partners there.
Mm-hmm. I think, why don't we start bundling a couple questions? Let's take these two in the front, and then we'll move to the back row. We'll just take two questions and then let you respond to both of them.
Hi, my name is Susan Furch, and my question has to do with how each of your organizations separately look at ROI on this partnership, and how, when you came together and developed this partnership, you looked at it and said, here are the metrics that are going to measure we're being successful. It's not just a feel-good thing, but this is how we're going to evaluate that it's a win-win on both sides and that it really is a win-win. It really is effective for each of you. How did you go through that process, and what are kind of those things you looked at? Because even as an NGO, you're still looking at, absolutely, you know, where your investments are going, mm-hmm, where your resources are going. So bottom, mm-hmm, line counts on both sides.
Yeah, great. And next to you.
Yeah, hi, I'm Tom Herlihy. I'm with Land O'Lakes, another small Minnesota-based company.
I'm paying people to mention Minnesota as many times as possible.
How many Minnesotans are in the room?
But I work in the International Development Division. I'm really interested in the link between the foundation and the business, because I've done public-private partnerships, and I can see, you know, Cargill has a cocoa processing facility in Ghana or Cote d'Ivoire. You want to reach smallholders, that's not what you do, that's what CARE does. CARE organizes smallholders, it gets them into co-ops, associations, and so forth, so that's a nice link. But, you know, what if I'm in a country where I don't know if Cargill's there? You know, it's a privately held company. Sometimes it's hard to tell where Cargill's working. So, I mean, I'd like to know.
I think we do have the list of countries now on our website. I hear you.
Okay. So you have gone that far. Okay. No, but I'm just curious about the link between the foundation and the business.
Okay.
And how that link is made. Thank you.
Okay. So questions on ROI and the links for the business. So
okay. Well, I'm happy to start. We did have fact sheets out there that talk a little bit about our partnership at a very high level, and on the back you'll see a set of goals and indicators that we are tracking. When we started this partnership, and we said, all right, 5 years, it's going to be great. We're going to focus in 5 countries and see what happens. And then we thought, you know, we really need a common set of indicators. And while all the programs will be different, because the needs are different from India to Central America to Brazil to Egypt, we wanted to, at the end of the day, to say we've accomplished something. And so that was where we worked with the country office to say what are some of the common indicators that we can track. And so we have goals around reaching 60,000 at-risk children and getting them in school, goals around improving the nutritional status of children, getting parents more involved in their child's education, improving yields and incomes for farm families. And so we're tracking those things across all the partnerships. So from a I would really call those outputs. And then we've talked more recently about, well, what is the impact? Mm-hmm. And so we've done some work with CARE's team too on the monitoring and evaluation piece, and how do we translate some of these outputs into really what was the outcome or what was the impact? And so I think we're still trying to figure that out. We just reached the midway point of the relationship at 2.5 years. So I think also beyond the numbers, we've also looked at what are some of the customer touch points that have resulted from this partnership. How has it impacted our ability to engage our employees in programs? How has it directly linked to our business? So there's other indicators that we may look at more internally to Cargill to determine, yes, it was successful, it was worth making such a sizable gift. We're also privately held, and while it may be hard to find the number of countries that we have or where we're located, it does give us some flexibility to invest more for the long term as well. So where a lot of companies have to kind of go year by year, we've invested over 5 years. We do that very purposely. These are big issues. They're not going to be addressed in 1 year. We wanted to commit to CARE that we're in this for the long haul. So that would be the outcome question. Do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, no. Okay. Just as Michelle had talked about, you know, other internal indicators. You know, we also have a few internal indicators that we look at. I talked about the shift from, you know, dollars and philanthropic to sort of multi-asset engagement. So we do try and look at from an advocacy perspective, you know, from an inclusive supply chain perspective, from an introduction to others in the industry and how they're also. So it's, you know, Cargill is big and that's terrific for them to, you know, do this. But how can we influence some of their customers as well? So we do track some of these other assets that are not as easy to track from a number perspective, you know, but, you know, when have we jointly gone and advocated on something together? When has Cargill brought its kind of base that we wouldn't traditionally be able to enter, for example? You know, so those types of networks and things like that are ones that we track. For an NGO that has limited amounts of unrestricted, we also are very careful about managing our ROI on just the effort, time, dollars, people that we put into effectively managing the partnership. And we actually look at that quite frequently. You know, I talked about it began as sort of, you know, one or two individuals on our side working with Cargill, and now it's, you know, yes, you know, you would say one or two dedicated, you know, individuals across, you know, a few, but there's 20% of someone's time, you know, another 10% of a technical expert's time. And so we do look at all of that in hard numbers, actually, and say, okay, so given what we're getting, both dollars as well as otherwise, is this justifiable? And, you know, in a very tight, unrestricted, you know, environment, we need to make that case, you know, almost annually when we talk about the types of partners that we're investing in as well.
Great, thanks. And we have we had a couple questions.
Sorry,
back.
I just wanted to answer his question about the foundation.
I'm sorry.
Okay, sorry, and it'll be quick. Actually, I'm not with the Cargill Foundation, but that's okay.
I'm sorry.
Actually, Cargill gives overall, we commit to giving about 2% of our pre-tax earnings, and we do that through three entities. There is a foundation, but it's very small, and it's focused in our headquarters community. There's some foundations created in other countries, but those are really more for tax reasons or things like that. The bulk of Cargill's giving comes through our corporate giving program and from our business units directly. So we have about a $30 million budget that's just a corporate budget, and that's where we invest in partnerships like we have with CARE. It does give us more flexibility. We still follow all the rules. It has to be, you know, a 501c3 organization or the equivalent in those countries. So we approach it a bit like a foundation, but that's also why it's so tied to our business goals. So we look at food security and responsible supply chains and food safety, and the partnerships investments we're making are very much tied to those because of our business.
Great, thank you. Okay, so in the back we had a couple of questions I wanted to take. Renee, and then right in front of Renee.
That's great. Renee McGuffin with the World Food Program. Thanks for providing us with a lot of the lessons learned from your partnership. I just wonder what, when you talk about the long term, the 5-year commitment, which is a tremendous commitment from a corporation, what do you look at beyond those 5 years when you're planning the funding on the CARE side and how you're going to use it, are there any steps you take to consider if it doesn't continue after the 5 years, how it will impact the beneficiaries that you might be working with? And from perhaps the Cargill side, is there ever a thought or a possibility that with corporate senior management change, you know, that the philosophy, I think, as Johanna had said, will change with it? And how do you, perhaps on your side, try and handle that?
Thank you, Renee. And there was a person with a hand in front of, yep, right there.
Thank you for being here today. And I'm Nadisa Koskarovska. I'm from National 4-H Council. And I have one quick question, which is kind of in connection with the previous questions about local partners. How do you select your local, this is more questions for CARE. How do you select your local NGOs, local businesses? Mm-hmm. What are the criteria for that? And how do you keep them accountable?
Sure.
Do they report to some local network manager, or do they report to some to the central offices? And how do you align that with your corporate partners? Thank you.
Great, thanks. Sure.
Go ahead and take the first question.
Yeah, why don't
first?
You start?
Okay, all right. In terms of sort of longevity of the partnerships and how we plan for beyond that, I think what we try to do is in each of our countries also there's the strategic plan of, you know, the segments we want to engage with, the types of interventions, et cetera. And what we try as much as possible to do is ensure that whether it's a corporate funded project or a bilateral, you know, aid funded project, that it is not isolated in some way. You know, we've got a lot of other projects that are, you know, connected to it in some way, so that, you know, it doesn't involve us going to a whole new state that we may not have been working in before in a whole new area, precisely because of the issues you've raised, you know, sort of responsible engagement and ensure that that's long-term as well. So one, we try to do that. Second, what we've actively tried to do in this shift to how we engage with partners also is we try to leverage multiple different partners, you know, together around a particular issue. So it's a little bit like putting a few puzzle pieces together and saying, okay, if it's food security and it's a particular area, what can one or two of our corporate partners bring to the table? And what might some academic partners and other NGO partners, you know, who have slightly different expertise, you know, bring to the table as well? And often what we will do is bring all of these partners together, you know, so it's very clear for them to understand how they're contributing, where they're contributing, and some of the dependencies, you know, so that it's not as easy, if you will, to pull out and to say, okay, we're done, you know, at this stage of the game as well. Having said that, we do know that things change and we can't, you know, count on things beyond a certain period of time. And so what we try and do in the course of the 5-year partnership is, you know, we don't just revisit what we're going to do after the 5 years and, you know, the beginning of year 5. You know, Michelle knows that the reason we talk constantly is so let's think about, you know, what's coming up next and where we may go. So a lot of that discussion is ongoing, you know, at the same time. And just as we had the question about how does this link with other partnerships, you know, we're very happy to see different types but related partnerships, you know, spring up that are, you know, when our partners are working with one another, and even if it's with another NGO, it just shows the level of depth and commitment, you know, to the particular issues as well.
And what does that look like from your side in terms of long-term planning and
preparation? Well, I think your question about, you know, whether or not if there's a leadership change, you know, would that really impact our ability to continue these partnerships or invest in new things? Actually, we have what we call the Cargill Contributions Committee. It's a group that really governs where it is we make these investments. Our CEO is not part of that committee. Actually, we're really fortunate. Cargill has a set of guidelines. We have a set of filters. We make decisions about those. We align them with our business strategy. And so having a real focus and a real strategy, I think, helps us keep kind of a more consistent program flow. So we really don't have that issue, and we're really, really fortunate. A part of that goes back to being really proactive and having a strategy around your giving so that it just doesn't change with kind of the wind. Mm-hmm. So we've also had pretty consistent leadership too within the organization, so we haven't had to worry about that.
I think the point that Michelle raises is really important. You know, the having a strategy and knowing how that can benefit the business units, you know, as well as on our side, how that can benefit the communities that we work with. That's part of the courting process and why it can take some time, because for us it's that sense of knowing that, you know, there's real bottom line business interests, you know, for Cargill to be in these countries and to continue to be in these communities mm-hmm. as well. And so often, you know, many of my colleagues within CARE who are not within sort of the partnerships arena or economic development arena will question us about, you know, well, yeah, aren't you concerned about the profit motivations and what that means, you know, for these communities as well? And it's actually, we sort of turn it around and say, you know, if there is a real interest, then we know that Cargill is going to continue to be, or whatever partner mm-hmm. is going to continue to be in these areas, you know, so that's an important, and if we, it's better to be a partner to be able to then influence as opposed to, you know, being outside, you know, not being able to, you know, to provide some guidance as well. So for us, that's an important part of the role.
Yeah, I think having a gift that ramps up very quickly and then drops off all of a sudden is almost worse than even exactly. not right. having it exactly. in the first place, because exactly. it creates such
right.
such a dilemma for right. all organizations.
And it's part of the conversation that we have. You know, when I just said Cargill is an alliance partner for us, you know, we actually take some time to explain that to Cargill and to, you know, and just so that there's a sense of responsibility, you know, and a sense of sort of what that means. And it's fine if, you know, companies at that point say, you know, this may not be what we're, you know, interested in or pursuing. And so that's why I can't stress enough the time that it takes to really get a deep understanding before you actually start to do anything together. For us, that's been a really valuable lesson learned mm-hmm. as well.
And then I think we'll make this last question, this our final question on 4-H. And I was just talking with someone from the National 4-H Council yesterday who explained to me that now youth groups are kind of proliferating along that model throughout the world. And it's been a really effective way to engage young people and to find new ways to get people to learn about health and nutrition and food and livestock and agriculture throughout the world. So, but I understand you may have a question about how you monitor that. So maybe Radha, you can address that.
Yeah, this was our local NGOs, yeah. right? And how, yeah, we, just as we talked about with our corporate partners, we have some very stringent guidelines, you know, for who we engage with in terms of NGOs at the local level mm-hmm. as well. Partly, I mean, in most countries, CARE started with significant US aid, you know, mm-hmm. Food for Peace money. And so there are some very specific guidelines there as well in terms of auditing and requirements, mm-hmm. et cetera. So I think we've benefited from that. What we've seen now is that there are different types of NGOs that we're engaging with, not just straight implementation NGOs. You know, they're those who are local advocacy, rights-based organizations, et cetera. And so there, it's really just having had a presence in many of these countries for several decades, understanding the various players, knowing who has, you know, who's considered a close and critical stakeholder. So there's some that are tangible metrics, I would say, and there are others that are just experience-based, you know, in terms of determining who we would engage with.
And is your lever your brand and your name?
Absolutely, yeah.
And once you go through that process, you can use the brand.
Exactly. And then it's in many cases, it's repeat local NGOs that we work with, you know, as well. And we've helped build the capacity of those NGOs over time. And we have pulled back in terms of our role, you know, given the strength now of many of these local NGOs as well.
Well, thank you. I will repeat very briefly, this is an ongoing series. We have an event coming up on July 5th, right, Libby? With Assistant Secretary Jose Fernandez from the State Department talking about how the U.S. government can enable more investment in abroad to improve economic growth and development. That'll be on our website. Also this coming Thursday, if you're interested in the Ag Research Agenda, rice is the second most consumed form of calories in the world, so we're talking about the rice research work that JICA, the Japan Foreign Assistance Agency, is doing in Africa. You can see Anna Applefield if you're interested. She can give you the details. Anna, wave. Okay. Now please join me in thanking this great duo. We really love talking to you. Thanks so much for joining us.